Welcome, Capital Raisers. On today's show, Satch Bernhardt breaks down how he got into capital raising for multifamily while running a successful single-family flipping business and doing that after starting a career as an airline pilot. We go into capital raising concepts and multifamily sub-niches and also buying apartments from developers. If you'd like to explore partnerships with me, talk shop on capital raising, or hire me as a coach, use the scheduling link in the show notes. With that, it's Capital Raiser Show episode 253, and it starts now. Rock and roll, I got Satch Bernhardt on the Capital Raiser Show. Welcome, man. How the heck are you, dude?
Good, good. I love that intro.
Very excited to talk to you, man. So we met on Yonah Weiss's challenge. I want to give him a huge shout out. Man, very cool to network with a bunch of people on there and then get introduced to multifamily syndicators and people that raise capital and do all kinds of really cool stuff. I was just chatting a little bit before the show with Satch about living in Puebla, in Cholula, yeah. Puebla, and he's a pilot. So we're going to go into a story a little bit. Capital Raiser Show Season 3 now brought to you by Pitch Deck. Satch, tell us a little bit about how you got into this world of syndication and raising capital and a little bit about how you discovered your place in this business.
Yeah, my former background is in aviation, right? So I was an airline pilot and then I wanted to gain freedom. I wanted to not fly as much as pilots are gone too much every month. So I wanted to find a way to stay home with my family and that got me into real estate. I started doing wholesaling, flipping houses, not knowing that I could go straight into multifamily. And a couple of years into it, then I realized that that was just another job. I was just trading my time for money again.
Yeah.
So I didn't like the single family home model. I never liked holding onto single family homes as a rental model. So I kept eyeing the multifamily space and I was just not sure how to get in it. And then I went to a conference. Could not tell you which one it was. It was a combination between reading books, conferences, and listening to other people on different Facebook groups and stuff, where I discovered that I could raise capital for deals. If I raise capital for deals, I can bring that money to another syndicator and say, hey, listen, I can probably bring $500,000 or $1 million to the table, and I can get a piece of equity in that deal. That was my light bulb moment when I said, okay, I can probably go that route and start doing this.
Okay, so you mentioned something that I refer to as the S-quadrant business model. So if you talk about Robert Kiyosaki, he brings up this concept, which is on the left of a specific quadrant, you have employees and self-employed people. And self-employed people could be considered fix and flippers. In other words, they have a job, they have their own business, but they're tied to it. So if they stop doing that, all of a sudden their income is lost. So then there's the business owners and the investors, people that invest in passive income type businesses. So tell me, what was it that, let's explore this a little bit. When you were fixing and flipping, you said that it was a job. I think this is a really huge moment in the history of a lot of capital raisers and multifamily syndicators where they realize, hey, like I am in business, but as soon as I walk away from my business, my money stops. Can you talk and expound a little bit about that?
Yeah. So we still have the business. We have 31 team members on that business right now. And we're still doing deals. At the end of the day, I'm still involved in it. Problems come up all the time and I'm having to get draw. I don't have an official title, like a role that I play in that company, but I'm just the guy putting out fires. So I'm constantly getting drawn back in to put out fires in that business to the point that it sometimes putting out those fires ends up being too long and too much headaches that I wonder at times, is the money that I'm making out of that business worth it? Is my time worth me putting out those fires, or could I just focus all that time into further developing the capital raising business? I guess for some people will say, well, it could be worth. It's not really too much of a job where it's not directly tied my time versus money. Like I'm not getting paid like an hourly wage. As you will say, all your time is involved in flipping the house. But yeah, we scale where you have a certain volume, but at the end of the day, still like my time being used to put all those fires to me is limiting from doing other things.
Okay, so just to clarify, you are a multifamily syndicator, but you also have a fix and flip business. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay, and then you're a pilot as well. Is that correct?
I stopped. So part of my story and why I'm very passionate about this is because through real estate in 2018 is when I was able to start generating income from real estate and I started dropping my trips. Funny story, some months I will not go fly at all, and the airline was paying for my insurance. So when you have a job, right, they pay for partial part of your insurance. So you have to pay like, I don't know, 20% or 30%, whatever the other side of it is. And since I made zero money because I did not go to work at all, I had to pay my employer so that they will pay for my insurance because I had no income coming in from them. But I loved it. You know, that's what I wanted. I wanted to have the flexibility to not go to work at all if I wanted to. And I was able to do that. In 2020, my airline shuts down during the pandemic. We thought that was not going to happen. We were a fairly bigger size airline. We have been around since like the 1990s. So we felt pretty good about ourselves. And all of a sudden we get the letter in the mail, you know, saying, hey guys, we're shutting down. And that was, to me, did not affect me at all because I had real estate going, but all of my coworkers, they were really struggling because not only did we shut down, but also nobody else was hiring. If being a pilot is all they know, then they have nothing else to do. So that's when I turned my mission and I said, you know, I can probably help a lot of pilots invest in real estate the way I was doing it. And they don't have to know much. I can be their guy on the ground doing all these deals and they can focus on flying and doing the thing that they love while I take care of the financial side and real estate for them.
Se me hace interesante la historia de cómo llegaste a ser un inversionista multifamiliar saliendo de México, right? So I want to hear about your Mexican history. What is your background? How long did you live there? How did you, I'm guessing you're a first generation Mexican, is just like Mexican American, just like me. Is that right?
It's funny. So my dad was from the US. He was down there in Mexico for a vacation. That's when he met my mom and he just stayed down there. So I actually grew up, I was born and raised in Mexico until I was 18. Never lived here in the States, had no reason to. My parents, since I was born, had always been in real estate. We have Airbnbs down there on the beach where we live in Mexico. And that was my mom's and my parents' side hustle, I guess you can say, right? And she owns her own business. And I always saw the real estate that they would keep pouring into it. So since such an early age, I saw this real estate income and what it can provide. So I always had ties to real estate somehow, and I always wanted to be in it. But I don't know, I had a passion for flying, you know? So when I turned 18, I didn't even go to college. I knew I wanted to be a pilot and I did my research. I found a school in Florida where I wanted to go. And that's it, dude. Like I just literally packed up my stuff and again, went to fly school, learned how to fly. And as soon as I was 21, which is the minimum age at which you can go to the airlines, I went to the airlines and I spent 7 years at the airline before we shut down.
Fascinating. So what point did you learn English? I know one of your parents was from the United States.
Yeah, it's more like since I was born, my dad will always speak to me in English and my mom in Spanish. Then it's a funny story that my dad used to not know how to speak Spanish and my mom didn't know how to speak English. You know, they was very limited. So to them to speak to each other was like very short sentences, stuff like that. But I was learning from both languages.
You can make it happen. My wife is from Mexico. My family's from Mexico, so I speak to her in Spanish, but most of the time in English, and then she responds to me in Spanish. Sometimes she talks to me in English, but the way that I see it is the path of least resistance. If my dominant language, even though Spanish was my first language, is English, and her dominant language is Spanish, she can communicate emotional things, important marriage concepts, what she wants to complete, what she wants to do, and what she wants for the relationship in Spanish, and I understand her completely. And then same thing, I say everything that I want to in English. And then we share a little bit of both languages, but it is very possible. So that's very cool. All right. So tell me about once you got to the United States, you did some fix and flips, and then the transition into syndication is something that I'm curious about. How did that develop?
As I'm doing more flips and flips, we're scaling that company and I'm getting some of my time back. My first misconception of the entire multifamily game and the syndications was that I had to like just pile up enough cash to put a down payment on a 50 unit or 100 unit complex. So it just seemed dreading. It was an unachievable goal up to me. So the more my goal was like, okay, if I can scale this flipping company super fast to where I'm getting a lot of cash flow, then I may in who knows how many years be able to put the down payment. As I started learning more about apartment complexes and started joining more Facebook groups, listening to more podcasts, I quickly learned that one, being a syndicator where you can get deals from other brokers that are 200, 300 units, it's probably not going to happen because once you don't have the track record just coming out of the blue to have done a deal that big, the ability for you to have a family office, somebody like that, to trust you on money for a deal that big is also not going to happen. If you're the main sponsor, never have done a deal that big. So I was like, man, how can I get into these deals without the experience and the track record? And I must have listened to a podcast or something. I honestly cannot tell you the exact moment where I found out that raising capital is an essential part of every single deal. And a lot of sponsors are always looking for capital. So that's when I decided that I was going to, through my years of having connections with other flippers, buyers, and family members, I know that they always wanted to be involved in my deals. I just didn't have a chance for them. So I figured, you know, I could probably bring capital to a deal. And why don't I just start doing that? That was my intro into multifamily. That was my transition to start doing capital raising.
Okay, cool. We'll talk a little bit about the education and nurturing that you're doing here to raise capital in a minute, but I wanted to bring up my time that I lived in Cholula because I met a bunch of people that were not of entrepreneurial mindset. And one of my friends, Carlos Castillo, shout out to him. I've never mentioned his name. He was a fantastic friend, still is a fantastic friend. I gave him a copy of Rich Dad, Poor Dad in Spanish. And he took off with it and started a 2 million peso a year business translating service. And it was so exciting. He actually took off way before I did in real estate or business and started making a bunch of money. But I'm curious about this, man. I want to explore this concept, man. A lot of people in Mexico, they have inferiority complexes. They think that they're United States little brother or sister. And they don't go off and trying to create amazing businesses. So how did you get past that inferiority complex if you had it? Or what can you say about that particular concept and how Mexicans listening in might be able to get past that? Because we do have probably about 1,000 Mexican listeners a month from Mexico. What kind of advice can you give them?
Dude, that's awesome, man. I didn't know you had this many Mexican listeners. Hey, I'd love to talk to as many of them as I can. As far as I do kind of see where you're coming from with that. Like, entrepreneurship is not really a topic spoken about a lot in growing up in Mexico. So I was an employee, right? When I was in Ireland, I was an employee. Never, not once did I think that I was going to be a business owner or an entrepreneur. And there's so many skills that go along with being one that, and I had zero, none of them. So starting my first business in wholesaling and flipping, I made a lot of mistakes. And I will say that I'm not sure too much about the inferiority complex. I think it was more of, I knew I didn't know a lot of the things that I needed to know, but I was going to learn along the way. So I take a lot of the power of something damaging me, I don't know if that's the right word to say it, by already knowing that I'm going to make, like, I already anticipate the future and that I'm going to make mistakes, and I go full force, right? Because mm-hmm. I know, like, okay, I'm either going to take too long, never do anything, and I'm still going to make a mistake at the end, or I can just accelerate the process and make the mistake faster, learn from it, and then keep moving on. I hope that helps if anybody has that sort of like hesitation on whether
making mistakes is part of the process for sure. You cannot become a successful entrepreneur without the mindset of I'm going to make a bunch of mistakes along the way and fail, because each one of these times that you fail, you become stronger and you get better and better and better until the point where you become successful. But it's part of the process. You can't just go from never making a mistake to successful. So I recommend that you embrace the fact that you're going to fail, and it's okay. It's not like in school where if you flunk a test, you are reprimanded or judged or banished or whatever. It's part of the process, guys. So embrace it. Like, if you have to go bankrupt to become a person that's buying high-rise buildings, just like Donald Trump has done multiple times, well, then do it, because it's part of the process. It's not a big deal. Yeah, it kind of sucks, but It is part of the process. And even Robert Kiyosaki has done the same thing, gone bankrupt. These are the most successful entrepreneurs in the country. And a lot of people think of Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos, and they're just like, oh, the most phenomenal business people on the planet. But if you only knew how much pain that they suffered and failure along the way, you might be like, damn, have that much more respect for them, because it's not a straight path to success. So with that, man, I'll give you a chance to speak on that, and then we can dive into capital raising and nurturing and educating people.
The only thing I was going to add is that I've trying to scale their wholesaling and flipping business, I've gone out of money twice. Like, I failed twice at doing it. And it's like, I did not know that that was going to happen starting off, but there are skills that I did not have that I needed before scaling, but there was just no way for me to know which ones they were. Maybe there was, and I was not aware of which ones they were. So I just went with it and I started scaling the business. And then all of a sudden I was not putting the right people in place. So that was my fault on not knowing how to allocate the right person, not knowing how to tell, okay, who's the person that needs to be in this position right here to be able to properly execute on these tasks. I'll hire the wrong people. I'll put them in the wrong positions. And quickly, obviously, the synergy in the company was not happening. So things were just crumbling down. You can lose money pretty fast. Back when the market was shifting 2 months ago, there was a month where we lost. Even right now, where I will consider ourselves fairly successful in the wholesaling flipping space, we lost like negative $45,000. We still obviously had revenue coming in, but it was just not enough to offset our marketing. That was just the 1 month where everything completely shifted when the interest rates skyrocketed nonstop until they got to where they are today, right? So it was a fast changing environment and it was just totally outside of our control. But we learned throughout my many failures that we need to have enough cash reserves to keep enough cash reserves for 6 months in that business, that the 1 month that we were negative 45,000, it's not a big deal. Obviously, if we continue this for the next 5 months, then we're not going to be here, but we know how to properly take action and correct these things. But those are things that I did not know before starting a business. I learned all these things along the way.
So before we go into education and nurturing and capital raising, tell us, what is your business model? Are you in multifamily value add? Tell me, what do you do?
Yeah, multifamily value add. That's the primary asset class for us, class A, B, and C, Texas and Florida. We have some assets in Arizona as well.
So an A class and a C class are very different business models, even though they're sub niches of multifamily. One cash flows a lot more from day one. Another one, you get a bigger equity share towards the end when you sell the property. How have you been able to educate and nurture people on what it is that you do and when it makes sense to invest in one versus the other? Talk to us a little bit about that process.
So as far as educating people, I'm constantly just sharing what I know and things that I'm learning. As far as multifamily, I'm very active on LinkedIn, just putting posts, things that I'm doing. And as far as the differences between class A and class C and when to invest in one or the other, I think it has to do more, this is just my opinion, it will be more with the business plan and what the basis are that you're buying the property at. We recently closed this 3 months ago, we closed on a class A in Houston, and all the fundamentals are there for the market. This is a very strong area. It's in the suburbs, it's not in downtown. So we're buying the property straight from the developer, this specific developer. They were not focusing on, it's still a value add. Many people, I met a lot of the investors that were coming into this deal, that they were thinking, well, how come this is a value add? It's a brand new property. But the value add came in. Yes, we're not renovating the units. We're simply, it's more of like an operations value add. We're improving and managing the property. We are eliminating the concessions. This developer was just filling up the units. They were not caring about maximizing the rents to what they should be. They were giving a lot of concessions just to get people in the door. So our process is to go in there, eliminate those concessions and increase the rents to what they should be in market rent and add as many amenities as we can, like over parking, VIP parking, valet trash, all these little things that eventually add up to a lot of cash flow at the end that we can tack onto the bottom line as well.
On your future deals, are you using a regulation 506B or C?
So I do both. Some deals I do 506B, some deals are 506C. That particular one that I just spoke about, well, that was a 506C deal we raised. That one was total purchase price was $77 million. We raised $25 million. So that one was a pretty chunkable size, right? So we needed to go the 506C route. But We do some 506B as well. A lot of my investor base, I sort of accumulate and I have a pulse on how many people I want to invest within my network that I know that are 506B. And when I get a sizable amount, then I seek with a to find a partner, a operator that can do a 506B deal.
Let me ask you about this, man. Like, what do you want to do in the future? Do you want to continue to do value add? Are you going to stay in this space? Do you see it as a long-term play?
My goal, I really envision a company like Blackstone, that they're strictly a private equity firm that move real estate is like their majority of their assets they control, but they also have other stuff, right? They have businesses, they have startups, they have different branches within like debt funds, right? So they have different things within their own company. That's the thing that I envision for myself, where I want to take this.
I'm guessing that you're more on the capital raising side, or do you do acquisitions, underwriting as well? More on the capital raising side.
Yeah.
Okay, so then how did you meet the partners that you raised capital for? How did you create that partnership?
Some of them I have invested as a passive investor first. Before I even raised any money from anybody, I invested in syndications just as a passive investor. I wanted to see what it was like. Some of them, I developed a relationship that way. I invested my own money in those deals first. Some others through masterminds, I connected with them, networking events, just met up with them. I kind of saw people that are very active in the educational space as well, and I see what they're doing, and I just start forming the relationships that way. I like people that are doing good things, that are educating people, that are putting themselves out there. They're not secret agents.
Do you expect that you're going to continue to work with these people, or do you potentially see yourself working with new people?
I do see myself working with new people. We're putting a deal together where I just got introduced to the sponsor team. I knew some of the guys on the GP side. I got introduced to the main sponsor through them, and we're about to do a deal together. I obviously do my due diligence on them as well. I see what the deals they have done in the past, but I'm always open to doing deals with new people.
So at what point did you discover that you had the capability to raise capital? Gear this particular answer to the person that wants to scale into capital raising, or that wants to grow their capital raising business. They want to partner with people, or they feel like they have the skill set. At what point did you make the decision? What do they need to know in order to create partnerships?
So as far as my ability, I thought I was a lot better than I actually was. I thought I had the capability of raising a lot more money than I actually did the first time. But I think it was just that. One thing I do, I love talking to people. I love forming relationships. I'm not a one transaction kind of guy. I'd rather do a lot of transactions with many people. So because I enjoy that, that's why I wanted to stick more with capital raising. I've done plenty of flips, managing contractors, managing projects that I honestly don't enjoy that much. I can do it, but it's not something that I want to be doing every day. It was more so rather something that I will prefer to be talking to investors and helping them create wealth that intrigued me the most to whether I was good or not. I was going to figure out a way to be good at it because that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that say that the acquiring and acquisitions and finding of real estate is a very distinct business than the finding and acquiring of real estate capital. What made you want to focus on the capital raising? Because I get a lot of people that come on the show and they're just like, I had no intention of becoming a capital raiser, but yet this is where I found myself. And there's other people that are just like, I wanted to be a capital raiser from day one because I knew that if I could master that craft, my services would be in demand forever.
Yeah, you bring a good point there at the end. So I had always had the Blackstone business model in mind since I started. When I was first debating, do I want to go full force in capital raising or do I want to start finding deals and learn how to operate deals? I looked at the long-term view and I said, okay, I can probably spend the next 5 years learning to be a very good operator, but then there's a ceiling there because I'm sort of limited to how many deals I can learn to operate. And I can sort of, I'll be capped at that point. And then I'm just going to be very good at the operating of multifamily deals. Whereas in capital raising, I saw a much longer runway and less of a ceiling because I can use those capital raising skills for not just multifamily, but more asset classes within real estate. I can use that capital raising for debt funds. I can use that capital raising for businesses. So if I, if when I kept in mind to my end goal, which was a Blackstone model, I said, well, capital raising is the one that will take me there and not finding deals. So that was my decision point there to go that route.
All right. One more question before we go into the lightning round. What did you used to do as a capital raiser that you no longer are doing, or what have you learned along the way? What's different about back then versus today?
I honestly stopped reaching out to family and friends about investing in deals. When I first started it, I thought I was going to be able to me, it's like no brainer to invest in these deals. So I was like, why would they not want to invest? So I kept pitching deals to them and they would just tell me no. So that's, I quickly stopped doing that because I'm like, I'm not one. I don't want to lose relationships, friendships because of that. I never pitch. I'm never out seeking out people to invest in my deals. I'm always rather, I'll rather attract people. They come to me. And then if they want to invest, invest. If not, then hey, maybe in the next one.
That's fantastic. All right, cool, man. Let's jump into the lightning round. Let's start with this question. What's the best vacation you've ever taken?
Best vacation is a repeat vacation that's going to my hometown. We live on the beach in Mexico.
Where?
And it's called Malaque. It's a very small town on the west coast, just south of Puerto Vallarta.
Okay.
We go there maybe every 6 months. That's the best vacation. I've been a lot of places as a pilot, and by far, going back to my hometown is the best.
Cool. I need to have to check that place out because Puerto Vallarta, I've been to a place called San Patricio, I think.
Dude, that's it. That's my town.
Is that your town?
Yeah.
I've been there, dude.
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Okay, cool, man. Favorite book of any kind?
That's it. Blackstone is right here. It's called What It Takes.
Beautiful. Well, how about this, man? How long do you want to live?
I don't have really a number. I talk about that with my wife because she's all about eating good food, organic and not chemicals and all stuff so that we can live longer. And I'm always, it's a fun, I say it as a joke, but in reality, I really mean like, I don't care to live too long. I just care to live. The time that I'm here, I want to live it to the fullest. I don't want to live 20 years of my life, my last 20 years of my life, not being it. Just because I wanted to live to 150 and they're like miserable 20 years, you know? I'd rather live whatever it is, just to the full.
Beautiful. All right, where do you want to travel to that you've never been to?
Greece.
Best way to raise capital from your perspective?
Educating.
Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
Just do it.
That's a good one. All right, how about this? My partner, Andy McMullen, wants to know, this is what he asked me when he interviewed me. When was the last time you felt like a loser?
Like almost every week.
It's common. It is. So just so that you guys know, like people that are successful syndicators, we don't feel like winners all the time. We constantly go through this thing where we're doubting and questioning ourselves. Is this correct from your perspective?
Yep. I turned 30 this year and I told my wife, I was like, I can't believe I'm 30 and I'm not even close enough to where I want to be. And it's like, she looks at me like I'm crazy. I'm sure you have those thoughts too, right? You're like, man, when am I going to make it?
Yeah, man, I'm 47, dude. I have those thoughts all the time. Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
No, I think they have to do with the way I feel, but I think business is totally math and execution on the right tasks. So what it does affect though is if I'm the one making decisions and moving the business forward and my spiritual is totally not there, then I will probably be making the wrong decisions.
Bingo. Okay, cool. What do you love best about working out?
If I have a problem, I'm sitting here at my desk and I can't figure it out, I go work out and I know the answer. I don't know what it is. It's just something about my brain maybe gets oxygenated. I don't know what it is, but I can, it allows me to think better and feel good.
Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
Miracle. My mom had cancer. She was going to die. I was pretty young and she didn't. So to me, that was a miracle.
God bless. That's fantastic. All right. Last question brought to you by Shannon Amigo. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
That you can do anything you put yourself to, your mind to.
I love that answer. All right, cool. Thanks for entertaining us on that part of the show. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation, my company, Legacy Acquisitions, and our sponsors, Good Egg Investments, Syndication Pro, Apartment Educators, The Family Office Club, and PitchStacks.com. Satch, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
Yeah, absolutely. I hope I can add value to people all the time. So I created an ebook what I Beautiful. Laid out, the syndication model, how it works. I've went very explicit, pour a lot of work into it. So if you want to download it, go to bernhardcapital.net/ebook, and it's completely free. I'm very active on LinkedIn. So if you guys want to just look at my name, Satch Bernhardt, I'm there on LinkedIn. There's not many people with my name, so it's pretty easy to find. Or just go to my website. My email is there. Shoot me an email. All my phone number and email is everywhere. So pretty
easy. And that's where I met you, is on LinkedIn, man.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right. Any last words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or syndicator as they scale on their journey?
Dude, just make connections. Network with people. Just the way we met, right? Just people have everything you want.
That's fantastic. All right, cool, man. This has been fantastic. I really appreciate you coming on the show. Glad to connect with you here on the show, man. This has been a blast hanging out with you. This has been fantastic, man. Thank you for coming on.
Yo, really, thank you, Ruben. Thank you for having me, man.